State Senator Arthur Orr joins us on the line. Senator Orr, how are you this morning?
Hey, Jeff, good morning. Good to be with you. I just wish I were down there in your neck of the woods having a little bit warmer weather than we're facing up here in the Northland.
Well, when you say a little bit warmer, it's not much warmer up there than it is. It's still in the 40s here, or at least it was when I was coming in to work. How have things been? It's been a while since we talked.
Oh, we're doing fine, getting ready for the holidays. And, you know, I don't think we're going to have a special session, so that's kind of punted everything till February. And we got a lot of things to do when we go back in, that's for sure.
Are you surprised that the special session didn't happen? I know there's the fear of COVID, and look, you got your own little COVID caucus going on in the state Senate, but it just seemed like when you guys adjourned back in May that the special session was inevitable.
Well, I was hoping we could have done something in, say, August when the virus cycled down a bit, late August, and could have taken the plunge there, but you know, that was not to be, and you know, we missed that window of opportunity. It wasn't completely optimal. You know, I know there was still some concern, but anyway, we'll be ready for February, but we do have a lot of pent-up business. In fact, I think there's so much business that we have that we'll have to get accomplished, and that the virus is still floating around. We may be looking at a restriction on, you know, as far as what bills we take up and focus only on X number of bills, and all the rest just need to wait till 2022.
I mean, it sounds to me the three that are going to get the most attention right early, your effort with the liability immunity, some taxation questions about CARES Act benefits, and then some of these economic development packages that need to be renewed.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. You know, what's interesting, some people say, why do we need what we call a safe harbor bill? And, you know, why do we need that? And look at, you know, that may be the issue that torpedoes the federal relief bill of some $900 million that you hear about, that's the final large sticking point. And people say, well, we haven't seen a lot of lawsuits. But you can't tell me that if the plaintiff bar weren't angling for that to have an open field, when it comes to coronavirus lawsuits, they would just roll over and that federal legislation would just fly through. But I think they're waiting in the wings to start filing the lawsuits next year.
Right. I mean, they seem like while they are, you know, what could be nuisance lawsuits, but they would come at a cost to these businesses and perhaps the overall economy.
That's absolutely right. How do you, if you're the business owner, how do you prove a negative? How do you prove that that customer didn't get COVID in your store? How do you prove that that employee didn't catch it in your store? Just extremely difficult to prove. So because of that, you think, well, the jury may give the burden of proof's on the plaintiff. But let's be real here. If you have a very compelling circumstances, perhaps a death or a death of a relative of somebody who got infected, then the jury gets to the point, well, we want to help them out. We want to give them some money. And the defendant is left to, again, trying to prove a negative. So they figure, well, it'll be cheaper for us just to settle out of court. But you start adding those up, it gets quite expensive.
Yeah, and it also seems like it would be a burden to our legal system, you know, where we are having all these, you know, perhaps legal issues, that you have this on the docket all of a sudden, all of these COVID lawsuits, that it may not impact, like, be the private citizen directly, but it would have an impact on the broader scheme of our judiciary system.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it can grind it to a halt because you can't do a class action in this situation. You know, one suit's going to allege I caught it in Walmart. Another's going to allege it, oh, I caught it at work. And, you know, and they're all going to be different fact situations that can't be rolled into one large class action. So all that to say, yeah. And so what happens? Divorce cases are slower getting heard. Criminal cases are slowing getting heard. Other civil cases where you have real damages and people been injured and need relief, those don't get heard. And the judicial system just grinds slower and slower. And that's certainly not a good thing for those that are relying upon it.
Senator, this is probably, I know you've been making the statewide radio rounds this morning, Krueger. Thanks for making time in Mobile this morning. The reason I guess everybody's having you on is to talk about your effort to make sure that the state health officer isn't going to mandate this COVID-19 vaccine, or I would think any vaccine for that matter, that the state health officer said you must take this vaccine. Is that issue alone seems to be pretty important, but is there maybe a bigger issue here with the power that the state health officer has?
I think so. I think it's on two fronts. One, and Senator Whiteley from Auburn has will have a bill regarding the broader authority of the state public health officer. He filed one late in the session. It didn't get a hearing, but I really wanted to focus in on vaccines, and sometimes one bill will pass and the other won't. But, it's concerning to me, Jeff, that unelected individual, even if they were elected, is a concern enough that an unelected individual not responsible to the public could have this authority. And when I asked our legislative services agency several weeks ago to answer the question, does our state public health officer have the authority to mandate vaccines across the board? And the answer comes back a week or so later in a memo. Yes, he does. And, but it could be subject to legal challenge. But we know the courts are not conducive to, a quick answer many times. Now, they could issue an injunction. But that's highly unusual. So if something works its way through the legal system, people could be getting forced to take a vaccine. I don't think Scott Harris, our current public health officer, would go to that length. He's been very discerning as far as what he's done thus far. But we've got to think long term, decades down the road. And while people are focused on this issue, I think it's a debate our legislature needs to have, and we need to discuss it. And how, do we want to give the public health officer this authority? Right across the border from you in Florida, that public health officer does have the authority to mandate vaccines. So it's clear in some states they've got the explicit power. In Alabama, it's more implicit, but it's there nonetheless.
And could local officials do it? I know, I think the two health departments in Alabama, Mobile and Jefferson County, they could set their own guidelines, their own regulations. Would this keep, this seems like something that would be needed to be in place to even the local level as well.
You're spot on. That is correct. The locals do have the express or explicit authority, even surpassing that of the state public health officer, and that's something else that we touch on in the bill, or we address.
Because I guess we don't want to get too into like who it should and shouldn't had the vaccine, but at some level, would it be reasonable to say that people that work in the healthcare services should be mandated this vaccine in the state of Alabama? I know that we'll see where that goes, but is there a time when it's appropriate, where it is appropriate for the state to say you've got to do it?
You can start throwing up, Jeff, different scenarios. You can talk teachers, first responders, people working in hospitals, et cetera. And that's more of an employer-employee situation, not the government with some broad mandate. Now, you take school children, for example, and that comes up. People are like, we allow it. We require school children, but yes, but no. We do have exceptions. We have health exceptions. We have exceptions for religious beliefs, and those are real. And so do we need to also incorporate those in when it comes to businesses? So all of that, I think, gets discussed and debated in the legislative process, get input from private citizens, constituents of legislators, and see where, we wind up. But at the end of the day, this issue definitely needs to be addressed, and definitely we need to make a discerning decision about where we want to draw the lines here in the 21st century, and not just kind of shrug and say, we gave that authority back in the 70s or 50s, and that's the way it's going to be. We need to look at it again and see, is this where we need to be in the 21st century?
Do you foresee any pushback to this?
Oh, yeah.
It seems like the public consensus maybe is on your side, but maybe it, within state government, that there's going to be people that are going to say, look, you got to leave this up to the experts.
Yeah, you hear that all the time, science, but for crying out loud, science has been wrong. Fauci's been wrong numerous times on numerous, you know, saying, oh, we don't, you know, don't worry about masks back in March and February. Oh, you know, in January, kind of belittling the pandemic, you know, fears and all that. I mean, that man, people, but they think he's, you know, a divinity in a sense, a lot of people. So, you know, if you want the vaccine, fine, take it, be protected. But you and I know that vaccines go through years and years of clinical trials, and this one's been hurried through. And I'm not criticizing, you know, they do what you got to do, but hurried through in 7 months. And do we know the long-term health effects and impacts of this vaccine on people long-term? And the obvious answer is no, we really don't. And before you start injecting people or forcing them to be injected with something, the companies will tell you, the pharmaceutical companies, they don't know how long this vaccine will last. They don't know if once you're vaccinated, you can still transmit the virus to someone else. So all those are still unknowns. And again, I say to each their own. If you don't want it, you shouldn't have to take it. And if you do, fine. Protect yourself, particularly if you're in one of these risk categories that we're well aware of.
How much should the state play a role in administering the vaccine? Now, I know there's a big effort underway, and we're talking about the military playing a role in it. I would think at some level the state of Alabama would be involved in that administration of the vaccine. Is it even though we shouldn't mandate it, should the state be playing a role in doling it out?
I think that's their function, and the public health department is getting ready, has a plan, and that's part of their assigned role and mission, and so certainly no qualms or quarrels there. You know, getting it out, making it accessible to the public, setting up, you know, different where you can just drive through, kind of like they did with the testing, and have all that capability out there for the public at large. But with at least one of these vaccines, you're going to have to get a second one, you know, and how many people are going to go back and remember to go back? And so there's a lot to it. My concern also comes, you know, where they're going to give you a vaccination card, and does that become a kind of litmus test or a whole, you know, so something you got to have in your pocket to do most anything in life? And where does it end if this, you know, requirement becomes, you know, you got to show your vaccine card to go to a basketball game, that kind of thing? Where does it end? And again, I think a healthy skepticism, and that's science in and of itself, is skepticism improved, you know, through repeated examinations of science is always a good thing. So anyway, with a 99.5 or whatever it is percent survivability rate, if you get the virus and you're not in a risk category, you know, that's a risk I personally will take on.
Joined by State Senator Arthur Orr here on the program. Last question before we let you go. It looks like you have a new pro tem coming in with Senator Reed, Senator Greg Reed, and then a new majority leader, Clay Schofield. It looks to me like it's maybe going to be a lot of the same as it has been. Is that your expectation?
Yes, it is. You know, this has kind of been in the background ever since the new quadrennium began 2 years ago. So I think you know, we're ready for the transition to occur. Dale Marsh has done a phenomenal job for 10 years and ready to kind of move on and push some particular legislation that he's interested in. But I think the transition will be seamless, and don't perceive any problems, certainly in the short term.
Senator, we got to leave it there, but thank you for making time for us this morning.
Jeff, always a pleasure, and you take care. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you as well. State Senator Arthur Orr, ladies and gentlemen.